And we have confidence in that, and that's maybe why we come every week. But so we engage in these rituals on a Sunday morning because we want to be trained in loving God and learning to love God. We want to be trained to love the God we have come to know and experience in Jesus. We want to be trained to love the God that Jesus loved, the God of liberation that we know through the Torah and the prophets. But what Smith does in his book is he takes this word liturgy and he uses the word to describe all kinds of rituals and practices that we engage in our culture, not just on a Sunday morning, for example. And so he talks about the mall as a liturgical site. I found this so interesting. So he describes the mall as a temple of worship in our culture. And in that temple, we are trained to be good consumers, right? All the ads and the aids are there around us to help us in our worship. The magnificent building that's huge, and we enter into the sanctuary and we feel safe in the enclosed sanctuary of the mall. The music is playing and we're lured from store to store, each space promising us to ease our pain and to help us escape. And we're discovering all kinds of desires and things that we didn't think we had until we got into this sanctuary. Wow, I never knew how much I wanted those shoes, how much I longed for those shoes until I saw them just now. So all around us, there's these images of two of the rich and the beautiful people, the slim people, often the white people, displayed, showing us what good life is all about and having more, being pretty, being white. That's the good life. And the mall is what Smith is saying, is just as much as the church is a religious site. It's a place of worship where our longings are being trained through this liturgy that we engage in. The liturgy of consumption, we might say. It's kind of scary, actually, when you start thinking about all that. But isn't it true that there are things and spaces like that all around us where we're being trained, our longings and our desires? And I think it's good for us to be thinking about that, to be attentive to our longings and our desires and how we're being trained. Because as people who are striving to be followers of Christ, striving to be followers of the Black Jesus of the gospel, we must pay attention to our spiritual formation. That is to say, how we're being formed as human beings, how our hearts are being shaped and trained to love. Because the reality is that there are rival liturgies out there who are competing for our hearts. And I think about this in terms of the liturgy, for example, of white supremacy. Whiteness is a strong thread that flows through our cultural liturgies. Seeing white as normal is part of the ideology of white supremacy. I was reading an article by Reggie Williams, who's a theologian. He teaches a class on racism at McCormick Seminary. And he has this exercise he does with his class where mostly the people in his class are white students. And he has them write down on a piece of paper what comes to mind when he names different categories of people. So they have to write down, when you hear Asian people, what do you write down? When you hear Black people, when you hear Arab people, when you hear Mexican people, what comes to mind? He has them go through this, and he always saves white people for last, and he does that at the very end, and he notices that that is the most challenging category for people to describe. Because, he says, whiteness is the backdrop against which all other categories of race are seen. And so other racial categories are organized according to the ideal white human. Yet because whiteness is the norm, it remains largely invisible to many white folks, and so it's hard to describe it. And I'm thinking about this kind of the liturgies that we're involved in, or the ways that we're being trained to understand and how our longings and desires are being trained. And I think this ideology of whiteness flows through those liturgies in our culture. Now, in reading our scripture readings this morning, particularly the passage from Deuteronomy that we do know well, this this passage really moved me this morning, and as I was thinking about it this week, mainly because what stands out is that the ancient Israelites understood that the love of God and love of neighbor was something that required training. Our scripture reading from Deuteronomy begins with the Shema, which is one of the central and most important of all Jewish prayers. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength. But then it goes on. It says, take to heart all these instructions which I charge you this day. Impress them on your children. Recite them when you stay home and when you're away, when you lie down and when you get up. Bind them as a sign on your forehead, as a sign on your hand. Let them serve as a symbol on your forehead. Inscribe them on the doorsteps of your house and on your gates. Notice that the Israelites are asked to create a training ground for their spiritual formation. They are asked to create rituals and practices so that they will learn to love God alone and love neighbor as themselves. They understood that there are rival liturgies out there, rival liturgies of consumption and of racism, and they understood that they face rival liturgies that will train their hearts otherwise. So loving God requires a total commitment. You are to love God in wholehearted commitment. Your heart for them was the center of who you are, where your desires spring from. You are to love God with your heart, with your soul, which meant total commitment to the point of death. And your might meant your possessions, all of your material wealth, your buildings, your houses, everything, all of that. You are supposed to love God with all your heart, soul, and might. And the ancient Israelites understood that this total commitment was not just a head thing. It's about not even about making a once and for all decision, but allegiance to Yahweh was submitting oneself to the training ground, to love's training ground. And they knew they were going to need ritual and repetition to do that. So they were to teach their children, and of course, if you're a parent or you're an educator, you know that when you teach your children, you're also learning things, so it comes back at you. You're supposed to teach your children. You were to repeat the teachings at night and in the morning and throughout the day. They were literally to take the Torah and wear it on themselves to remember. They were to put the Torah in their homes, on their doorsteps and their gates, so that they would not forget to love the Lord with all their heart and soul and strength. Over the next weeks, we are starting a sermon series, and we're going to be looking closely at this theme around what's going on in our hearts. Where are our longings and desires? Where are they being directed? And we're going to look at this by exploring the seven deadly sins: envy, vainglory, sloth, lust, greed, gluttony, and wrath. It's really fun to say that quick, so you should try it. These seven sins are what the earliest Christians identified as standing in the way of their ability to love with all their hearts and souls and strength. So the early Christians paid rigorous attention to these seven things that seemed to often come up for them, often stood in the way of their ability to love. And so we're going to be working through those together. We'll have opportunities to talk about those things. And as you noticed this morning in our reading from Romans, Paul knew about these heart struggles. His struggles led him to blurt out in his letter to Romans, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm doing the very things that I hate. Even though I know what is good, I seem to not be able to do it. And he's expressing this heart struggle, this wanting and desiring to do good, wanting to become wholehearted lovers of God, but knowing that it's hard work, and that we are up against rival liturgies in our culture that would train our hearts otherwise. So I think and I believe that attending to our loves and our longings is important work for us to do. And sometimes it requires a great deal of humility and rigorous attention to what's going on in your life and in your heart. But I believe that as followers of Jesus, we are to be intentional and thoughtful about what we love and how we're being trained to love. So I want to invite us in the coming weeks to journey together on that road and hope you will join us for that time.